Global Politics Podcast for Friday, September 27th. I'm Mike Weiser, State House Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises. With me today are Todd Dorman, political writer for the Cedar Rapids Gazette.
Good morning, Mike.
Ed Tibbetts, political writer for the Quad City Times.
Hi, Mike.
And John Erickson, political writer for the Waterloo Courier.
Good morning.
You can find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes. Today, we're going to discuss the Senate filibuster. Terry Branstad and Tyler Olson make D.C. jaunts and continuing problems with the state GOP. First up, the continuing fight over Obamacare and the Ted Cruz filibuster. Earlier this week, Texas Senator and frequent Iowa visitor Ted Cruz took to the Senate floor for 21 hours in an attempt to filibuster spending on the Affordable Care Act. The move was cheered by some who called him a hero and a patriot. Others, like Iowa Senator Tom Harkin, called it silly. Meanwhile, asked about attempts to defund Obamacare this week, Governor Terry Branstad says he doesn't pay attention to the political battles in D.C., and polls do show a majority of Americans don't favor defunding the act. Next week, people can start signing up for policies on the exchanges. So, John Erickson, was Cruz the last grasp at trying to make something happen with the ACA, or was it just the start of an argument that won't go away?
Well, I think first and foremost, this is a stunt that gets attention for Ted Cruz, most likely. He's up there talking for 21 hours and 19 minutes, mostly railing against the Affordable Care Act, but also throwing in a reading of Dr. Seuss's Green Eggs and Ham and talking about how much he likes White Castle hamburgers and giving a Darth Vader invitation. So it probably made for some interesting theater. I must admit, I didn't listen into the entire 21 hours of it. But, the fight against implementation of the Affordable Care Act isn't going away, I don't think, just because the exchanges open up next week or the mandates kick in 2014 and 2015. I don't think that means Republicans are going to stop trying to dismantle the Affordable Care Act. But I think really this very long-winded speech by Ted Cruz isn't necessarily thinking that it was going to stop it in its tracks. It was really just a stop because it wasn't filibustering and blocking a vote. It was really just trying to get him to make a point and get some more attention on the issue. So I think we'll see more going forward, still trying to stop the Affordable Care Act.
You know, what strikes me about it is that it, as much as anything, it lays bare the divisions in the Republican Party on tactics and in Washington, D.C. You saw the Senate Republican leadership essentially abandon Ted Cruz, and his argument seems to be as much with how they go about their business as it is with Obamacare.
So do you get the sense then that it's more of a tactical argument as opposed to a philosophical about the Affordable Care Act, right? From what you're seeing from this?
Well, it's certainly a tactical argument, but I think it also is substantive in that it shows divisions about how far certain parts of the party are willing to go to accomplish goals, and I think that has a bearing on their electability, So yeah, it's important stuff.
And I think it's interesting how Governor Branstad has handled this. I mean, the governor last year, fought against expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, and you know, you've got Republicans who feel like they right now in Washington feel like they need to do a lot to try to defund this. But you know, here at home, the governor's administration has actually done pretty well trying to make the Affordable Care Act work. They're trying to put an exchange together with us, you know, with the cooperation with the federal government. Unlike a lot of states, the governor's administration here isn't putting up roadblocks. They're not charging fees to navigators. So here's a Republican governor who's not really trying to make hay out of this issue, trying to throw up roadblocks. His administration's basically trying to adapt to this law as it's on the books. And I think that's interesting, you know, considering that he's, you know, seeking re-election next year. And I think he deserves some credit for not kind of throwing bombs at this, or because recognizing it's the law of the land.
you know, that's interesting. His healthcare, his Branstad's main healthcare person is a fellow by the name of Michael Buslow. And I was talking to Michael Buslow just about a week ago, right before all this stuff. Everyone knew that Ted Cruz was planning this thing. And I was kind of trying to feel Michael out for what the administration is. I mean, he's spent probably the greater part of the last 4 years of his life, or his professional life, trying to work on these bills. And he said that the philosophy of the governor was, you know, this is what it is, and we're going to do the best that we can with it, which kind of jives with what you said. In other words, that they weren't going to throw up the roadblocks, as you said, as you see in some of the states down there, and they are pushing forward, which makes me think if there's more Republican governors like that, and I'm sure that there are, that when all of a sudden they start talking about defunding it in Washington, D.C., that it's not going to play as well in the states who've put time and effort into trying to craft some of these plans. But I guess we'll see that as it goes forward.
You know, and I think Governor Branstad's probably pretty smart. Anybody who wades into this whole business that's going on right now, swirling around the whether to shut down the government or raise the debt ceiling, Obamacare, all that. Anybody who probably walks near it gets sullied, and so by staying out of it, by saying he doesn't pay a lot of attention to it, Branstad avoids some of that mud.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, with Washington Republicans, part of the narrative is, you know, if we don't fight this, you know, hammer and tong, that we're going to pay a price for it in a primary. Yet at the state level, you've got Republican governors who have agreed to do Medicaid expansion, that have done compromises, that are implementing the law. They don't seem to think that they're going to pay this high political price for basically living with it and trying to do the best they can. It's interesting that there's such a split in thinking between what the right strategy is in Washington and what it is in the states.
And speaking of strategies, next up, Tyler Olson, the Cedar Rapids state representative who is running for the Democratic nomination for governor, put out an ad this week with a play on the 1970 show The Brady Bunch, criticizing Governor Terry Branstad for meeting with Republican politicians this week in D.C. for a fundraiser. You can hear a little bit of that ad right here.
Here's a story about Terry Branstad heading to D.C. to raise some dough. He's hanging out with wacky right-wing politicians. They sure can make you say, whoa. Wait till you hear them and the wild ideas they're spreading. You will soon know that it's much more than a hunch. Extreme ideas that join them all together. That's the way they became the Branstad Bunch.
But Olson was also in D.C. recently on his own D.C. fundraiser, which struck me as a bit disingenuous. The Olson camp says it's not about the D.C. trip or where they were, but about who the governor was running elbows with, and that should give people pause. Ed Tibbetts, what do you think of the ad, and what do you make of the Olson explanation?
Well, it seemed to me the thrust of the ad was about who Branstad was raising money with and not where. But, you know, they mentioned it was in D.C. They left themselves with an opening, and the opposition exploited it. So, but what I think's really interesting about this is it gives a window into what the Democrats are thinking and how they're going to run against Branstad, whether it's Jack Hatch insinuating that there's an imperiousness to him, or Tyler Olson trying to portray him as in league with some of the more extreme elements of the GOP. It's clear so far that the Democrats aren't targeting Branstad's record so much as him. And that may be smart. I mean, unemployment's low, revenues are up. You can argue about whether Branstad had anything to do with that. But when you are arguing about good things that are happening in the state, that can't help but give some benefit to the Republicans, or rather to the incumbent. So I guess my sense is that this may be sending a signal to the Democrats that Olson is ready to hit Branstad hard. And so far, I think it's more been Hatch that's been the aggressor. And with party base, I think it's hard to get people excited if you're not in there slugging away.
The interesting one of your points that I want to follow up on is how you mentioned it does seem that they're attacking Branstad, the person, as opposed to the policies. I think part of the reason is that is both Hatch and Olson have been in the legislature, and they'd like to take credit for some of that, some of the good things that are happening in the state in terms of, you know, we always hear about the low unemployment in Iowa relative to the rest of the country, and I'm sure that they'd like to put that feather in their cap too. So why bring it up if it's the governor? And, you know, Todd Dorman, I was wondering what you thought of on a humor level of the Branstad ad. Did you have a or the anti-Branstad ad, the Olson ad? Did you have a chance to watch it, and then what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. I didn't laugh out loud. I didn't guffaw. I loved the Brady Bunch when I was a kid, though. That's a long time ago. But you know, I think if the argument is that the Terry Branstad's a Republican and he associates with other Republicans, I mean, I think we all know that. And I, you know, the extreme label is going to be something that Democrats are going to use. They use it all over the place when they fight Republicans. They're basically going to have to show Iowans, you know, how is Terry Branstad extreme? You can't basically say that he's extreme because he hangs out with Ted Cruz. You have to make a more substantive argument than that. It was a cute little ad. I'm not sure that it made a lot of difference. And in the end, the story ended up being that, hey, they both went to D.C. and had fundraisers, which I don't think means that it was terribly successful. I think they probably should have thought about that before they thought about the hypocrisy charge, which everyone loves, before they put that one out.
Absolutely. And lastly, the Iowa Republican Party politics. A couple of blows to the leadership of the Republican Party, State Republican Party Chairman A.J. Spiker this week when the State Central Committee voted to move the convention back to June 14th, despite Spiker's desire to have it in July. Also, some local state chapters are calling on the chairman to resign, including Polk County and Appanoose County. Todd Dorman, what's your guess on how this plays out? Is it going to get worse before it gets better for the state GOPs?
Well, I mean, it will probably get worse, and that there will be more calls for Spiker to resign. I think once they got past the convention calendar dispute and the caucus dispute, that maybe things would get a little bit better. But then Polk County came out with its call for him to resign after that. Look, I mean, I think Spiker's the victim of sort of the question that they rolled out against the president last year. You know, is the Republican Party better off than it was before A.J. Spiker took over? And I think objectively, it's hard to argue that it is. I mean, there's more infighting. The fundraising hasn't been great. You've seen, you know, lots of controversy over decisions and lots of, you know, tumult at like the district level. And the way it could get worse is if you have, you know, a convention next year that, you know, has a disputed Senate election or other disputed contest. I mean, that's going to be tough. And if there's a failure of confidence in the leadership of the party, that's not going to make any of that any easier.
I think probably the biggest part of that is the fundraising is where I get real concerns from Republicans, and that has fallen off. I think there's a lot of Republicans out there who find that the current infighting between various factions of the Republican Party is a healthy thing, that they're eventually going to bring more people into the fold through having the Liberty Movement be a big part of the Republican Party. But they want a good, solid structure down statewide to be able to do elections going forward, and fundraising is part of that.
Do you get that sense, though, John? I wanted to ask you, do you get that sense that they want the Liberty Movement to be part of the party? It seems to me that a lot of this argument is that they want to expel the Liberty Movement because they don't agree what they stand for, and it's not along the lines. But you see it differently, that they want to bring them into the fold?
Yeah, I do, actually. I mean, they want, obviously, the Liberty Movement to be a little more compromising than what they have been, to be a little bit more traditional, I guess. But that's, I think I've seen, or I've heard people talking about how that's a process and it might take a while. But, you know, it hasn't been that long since people for the Ron Paul supporters got into leadership in the party. So, I mean, it's obviously still in transition.
Well, and the friction between party factions is going to happen, but what you want is party leadership to play the role as an adult referee. You don't want them to join one of the factions and help them and use the state party apparatus to wage war on other factions. And I think that's what's going on in the RPI right now, is that you've got the Spiker gang who is basically running the party like they're running that single faction, and they're running it for the benefit of that faction. And I think that's what's causing a lot of the turmoil and a lot of the anger from other Republicans.
Well, that's it for today's On Iowa Politics podcast. I hope it was worth your time, and thanks for listening. If you like the show, tell a friend and subscribe to us on iTunes. It'll help more people find the podcast. You can find us every week on the homepages of the Quad City Times, Sioux City Journal, Muscatine Journal, Mason City Globe Gazette, Waterloo Courier, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Porch Builder, a country band from Riverside, will take us out. If you are in a band or you know a talented Iowa musician who should be on our show, Drop us a line, or better yet, a sound file, and remember to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on iTunes. For John, Todd, and Ed, and producer Max, I'm Mike Weiser. Thanks for listening.
Well, I've got an old motorbike and I ride it into town. It's getting